Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Watson in the Ten Commandments book. And last time we started the Ten Commandments, the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And we did the first section on that. And we're ready to, that we must have God for our God. That was section one. And now we're planning on going to section two, which is that we must have no other God. And so we'll go ahead and continue. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Question, what is meant by the words before me? It means before my face or in my sight. Cursed be the man that maketh any graven image and putteth it in a secret place. Deuteronomy 27:15. Some would not bow to the idol, I-D-O-L, in the sight of others, but they would secretly bow to it. But though this was out of man's sight, it was not out of God's sight. Cursed, therefore, says God, be he that puts the image in a secret place. Thou shalt have no other gods. And so, number one, there is really no other God. And number two, we must have no other God. Number one, there is really no other God. The Valentinians held there were two gods. The polytheists, that there were many. The Persians worshipped the sun, S-U-N. The Egyptians, the ox and elephant. The Grecians, Jupiter. But there is no other than the true God. Know therefore this day and consider it in thy heart that the Lord, he is God in heaven above and upon the earth beneath. There is none else, Deuteronomy 4:39. For, number one, there is but one first cause that has its being of itself and on which all other things depend. As in the heavens, the primum mobile moves all other orbs, so God is the great mover. He gives life and motion to everything that exists. Number two, there is but one omnipotent power. If there be two omnipotents, we must always suppose a contest between the two. That which one would do, the other, being equal, would oppose, and so all things would be brought into confusion. If a ship should have two pilots of equal power, one would be ever crossing the other. When one would sail, the other would cast anchor. There would be confusion, and the ship would perish. The order and harmony in the world, the constant and uniform government of all things, is a clear argument that there is but one omnipotent, one God that rules all. I am the first, and I am the last, and beside me there is no God. Isaiah 44, verse 6. And it doesn't even make sense. If one is all-powerful, then there can't be something else all-powerful. It doesn't make sense, actually. All right, there really is no other God. And number two, we must have no other God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. This commandment forbids, number one, serving a false god and not the true God, saying to a stock, thou art my father, and to a stone, thou hast brought me forth, Jeremiah 2:27. Or number two, joining a false god with the true. They feared the Lord and served their own gods. So you have they feared the Lord and served their own gods. 2 Kings 17:33. These are forbidden in the commandment. We must adhere to the true God and no other. God is a jealous God, and he will endure no rival. A wife cannot lawfully have two husbands at once, nor may we have two gods. Thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord is a jealous God. Exodus 34:14. Their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another god. Psalm 16:4. The Lord interprets it a forsaking of him to espouse any other god. They forsook the Lord and followed other gods. Judges 2:12. God would not have his people so much as make mention of idol, I-D-O-L, gods. Make no mention of the name of other gods, neither let it be heard of thy mouth. Exodus 23:13. God looks upon it as breaking the marriage covenant to go after other gods. Therefore, when Israel committed idolatry with the golden calf, God disclaimed his interest in them. Thy people have corrupted themselves, Exodus 32:7. Before, God called Israel his people, but when they went after other gods, now, says the Lord to Moses, they are no more my people, but thy people. Plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, Hosea 2, verse 2. She does not keep faith with me. She has stained herself with idols. Therefore, I will divorce her. She is not my wife. To go after other gods is what God cannot bear. It makes the fury rise up in his face. If thy brother or thy son or thy wife of thy bosom or thy friend, which is as thine own soul, entice thee secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, thou shalt not consent unto him, neither shall thine eye pity him, but thou shalt surely kill him. Thine hand shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. Deuteronomy 13, 6, 8, and 9. Question, what is to have other gods beside the true God? I fear upon search we have more idolaters among us than we are aware of. The answers, number one, to trust in anything more than God is to make it a god. If we trust in our riches, we make riches our god. We may take comfort, but not put confidence in them. It is a foolish thing to trust in them. They are deceitful riches, and it is foolish to trust to that which will deceive us. Matthew 13:22. They have no solid consistency. They are like landscapes or golden dreams, which leave the soul empty when it awakes or comes to itself. They are not what they promise. They promise to satisfy our desires, and they increase them. They promise to stay with us, and they take wings or leave us. They are hurtful, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt, Ecclesiastes 5:13. It is foolish to trust to that which will hurt oneself. Who would take hold of the edge of a razor to help him? They are often fuel for pride and lust, or corrupt desires of the heart. That's what often lust is in Puritan writings. Ezekiel 28 verse 5, Jeremiah 5 verse 7. It is folly to trust in our riches, but how many do and make money their god? The rich man's wealth is his strong city, Proverbs 10, 15. He makes the wedge of gold his hope, Job 31, 24. God made man of the dust of the earth, and man makes a god of the dust of the earth. Money is his creator, redeemer, comforter. His creator, for if he has money, he thinks he is made. His redeemer, for if he be in danger, he trusts to his money to redeem him. His comforter, for if he be sad, money is the golden harp to drive away the evil spirit. Thus, by trusting to money, we make it a god. If we trust in the arm of the flesh, we make it a god. Cursed be the man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm. Jeremiah 17:5. The Syrians trusted in their army, which was so numerous that it filled the country, but this arm of flesh withered, 1 Kings 20:27 and 29. What we make our trust, God makes our shame. The sheep run to the hedges for shelter, and they lose their wool. So we have run to second causes to help us and have lost much of our golden fleece. They have not only been reeds to fail us, but thorns to prick us. We have broken our parliament crutches by leaning too hard upon them. If we trust in our wisdom, we make it a god. Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. Jeremiah 9:23. Glorying is the height of confidence. Many a man makes an idol of his wit and parts. He deifies himself, but how often does God take the wise in their own craftiness? Job 5:13. Ahithophel had a great wit. His counsel was made as the oracle of God, but his wit brought him to the halter. 2 Samuel 17:23. If we trust in our civility, we make it a god. Many trust to this that none can charge them with gross sin. Civility is but nature refined and cultivated. A man may be washed and not changed. His life may be civil, and yet there may be some reigning sin in his heart. The Pharisee could say, "I am no adulterer," Luke 18:11, but he could not say, "I am not proud." To trust to civility is to trust to a spider's web. If we trust to our duties to save us, we make them a god. Our righteousness are as filthy rags. They are fly-blown with sin. Isaiah 64:6. Put gold in the fire, and much dross comes out. So our most golden duties are mixed with infirmity. There is sin, at least some, in everything we do, because our corrupt nature is still around. Our carnal man still exists. We are apt either to neglect duty or idolize it. Use duty, but do not trust to it, for then you make it a god. Trust not to your praying and hearing. They are means of salvation, but they are not the saviors. If you make duties bladders to trust to, you may sink with them to hell. So bladders, I guess, like a floating device in a sea or in a body of water. And if you trust them, you may sink with them to hell. If we trust in our grace, we make a god of it. Grace is but a creature. If we trust to it, we make it an idol. Grace is imperfect, and we must not trust to that which is imperfect to save us. I have walked in my integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord. Psalm 26:1. David walked in his integrity, but did not trust in his integrity. I have trusted in the Lord. If we trust in our graces, we make a Christ of them. They are good graces, but bad Christs. All right, that was to trust in anything more than God. And number two, to love anything more than God is to make it a god. If we love our estate more than God, we make it a god. The young man in the gospel loved his gold better than his Savior. The world lay nearer to his heart than Christ. Matthew 19:22. This gold with its glitter blinds the eyes, said Berius, I believe. The covetous man is called an idolater. Ephesians 5:5. Why so? Because he loves his estate more than God, and so makes it his god. Though he does not bow down to an idol, if he worships the graven image in his coins, he is an idolater. That which has most of the heart, we make a god of. If we love our pleasure more than God, we make a god of it. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, 2 Timothy 3:4. Many let loose the reins, like a horse reins, and give themselves up to all manner of sensual delights, which are things that delight the senses. They idolize pleasure. They take the timbrel and the harp and rejoice at the sound of the organ. They spend their days in mirth. Job 21:12-13. I have read of a place in Africa where the people spend all their time in dancing and making merry, and have not we many who make a god of pleasure, who spend their time in going to plays and visiting ballrooms, as if God had made them like the Leviathan to play in the water? Psalm 104:26. In the country of Sardinia, there is an herb like balm, if anyone eats too much of it, he will die laughing. Such an herb is pleasure. If anyone feeds immoderately on it, he will go laughing to hell. Let such as make a god of pleasure read but these two scriptures. The heart of fools is in the house of mirth, Ecclesiastes 7:4. How much she has lived deliciously, so much torment give her, Revelation 18:7. Sugar laid in a damp place turns to water, so all the sugared joys and pleasures of sinners will turn to the water of tears at last. If we love our belly more than God, we make a god of it. Whose god is their belly? Philippians 3:19. Clemens Alexandrinus writes of a fish that had its heart in its belly, an emblem of epicures whose heart is in their belly. They seek their sacrifari lari, I don't know, their belly is their god, and to this god they pour drink offerings. The Lord allows what is fitting for the recruiting of nature. I will send grass that thou mayest eat and be full. Deuteronomy 11:15. But to mind nothing but the indulging of the appetite is idolatry. Whose god is their belly? What pity is it that the soul, that princely part, which sways the scepter of reason and is akin to angels, should be enslaved to the brutish part of man? If we love a child more than God, we make a god of it. How many are guilty in this kind? They think of their children and delight more in them than in God. They grieve more for the loss of their firstborn than for the loss of their first love. This is to make an idol of a child and to set it in God's room. Thus, God is often provoked to take away our children. If we love the jewel more than him that gave it, God will take away the jewel that our love may return to him again. Use number one, it reproves such as have other gods and so renounce the true God. Number one, such as set up idols. According to the number of thy cities are thy gods, O Judah, Jeremiah 2:28. Their altars are as heaps in the furrows of the fields, Hosea 12, verse 11. Number two, it reproves such as seek to familiar spirits. This is a sin condemned by the law of God. There shall not be found among you a consulter with familiar spirits, Deuteronomy 18:11. Ordinarily, if people have lost any of their goods, they send to wizards and soothsayers to know how they may come by them again. What is this but to make a god of the devil by consulting with him and putting their trust in him? What? Because you have lost your goods, will you lose your souls too? 2 Kings 1:6. Is it not because you think there is not a God in heaven that you ask counsel of the devil? If any be guilty, be humbled. Use number two. It sounds a retreat in our ears. Let it call us off from idolizing any creature, which is anything that is part of creation, and that even said it can be graces, spiritual graces, and lead us to renounce other gods and cleave to the true God and his service. If we go away from God, we know not where to mend ourselves. Number one, it is honorable to serve the true God. To serve God is to reign, as in a princely reign. It is more honor to serve God than to have kings serve us. Number two, serving the true God is delightful. I will make them joyful in my house of prayer, Isaiah 56, verse 7. God often displays the banner of his love in an ordinance and pours the oil of gladness into the heart. All God's ways are pleasantness. His paths are strewed with roses. Proverbs 3, verse 17. Number three, serving the true God is beneficial. Men have great gain here, the hidden manna, inward peace, and great reward to come. They that serve God shall have a kingdom when they die and shall wear a crown made of the flowers of paradise, Luke 12:32. 1 Peter 5, verse 4. To serve the true God is in our true interest. God has twisted his glory and our salvation together. He bids us believe, and why? That we may be saved. Therefore, renounce all others and let us cleave to the true God. Number four, you have covenanted to serve the true Jehovah, renouncing all others. When one has entered into covenant with his master, and the indentures are drawn and sealed, he cannot go back, but must serve out his time. We have covenanted in baptism to take the Lord for our God, renouncing all others, and renewed this covenant in the Lord's Supper, and shall we not keep our solemn vow and covenant? We cannot go away from God without the highest perjury. If any man draw back, as a soldier that steals away from his colors, my soul shall have no pleasure in him, Hebrews 10:38. I will pour vials of wrath on him and make mine arrows drunk with blood. Number 5, none ever had cause to repent of cleaving to God and his service. Some have repented that they had made a god of the world. Cardinal Wolsey said, "Oh, if I had served my God as I have served my king, he would never have left me thus." None ever complained of serving God. It was their comfort and their crown on their deathbed. All right, that is the end of the first commandment. And so, Lord willing, we will plan to go on to the second commandment next time. But until then, go as having God as your God and only as your God with no other gods. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.